Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity.
Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now, right now.
Now's the time to do the right, right thing.
We want to do it right. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And this is the time and the place where we connect the various struggles in the world, folks fighting against Zionism, against authoritarianism. And that's becoming more and more a battle right here in these United Snakes. So, but there are people who are fighting for things. They're fighting for democracy, for justice. And we know that we cannot have peace, not here in St. Louis, not here in the States, not here in the world, unless there is justice. And right now, I think that is where we are. There's so much injustice, so much corruption that it's difficult for people to have a full and meaningful life. They're going to spend most of their time fighting just to survive. And for folks here in St. Louis who are still recovering from the tornado, that's an added burden, and the stress is really just unbearable. But, you know, this is the time that I remind you that we still have a pathological liar and a 34-count felon in the White House. And every day he becomes more and more unhinged. Yet we cannot count on the branches of government who are supposed to check the executive branch. So, it's been sporadic from the judicial branch in terms of stopping the authoritarian reign, but is unpredictable. So we can't, count on these folks to check this man. So what I tell you we have to do, the fourth branch of government is the people, us. And so we are going to have to, put a halt to this man. And I keep saying we can invoke, Amendment 25, because it's clear to me, and it's probably clear to the rest of the world, that, Trump is unfit for this office. He's also, in cahoots with Netanyahu, who is, as far as I'm concerned, just like Putin, he's a war criminal. More and more we see the likes of what he's really trying to do. And so our guests today are going to help us unpack and understand some of this stuff. Yesterday was the second anniversary of the attack on Gaza, and it's been relentless since then. And I remember one of the headlines from the New York Times saying Israel is trying to flatten out Gaza City. And if that doesn't say it all, I don't know what does. So I want to welcome to the show, first of all, Alam Jaber, who was with us before, her and her sister. And since then, she's become a new mom. So congratulations and welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jamala. It's good to be back.
And Michael, this is his first time going to the show, but he is not a stranger because I worked with Michael on many different issues, including water rights right here in St. Louis, not somewhere in the undeveloped country, but right here in St. Louis. And so he definitely has been on the battlefield for various issues. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Jamal. It's an honor to be on your show.
And Michael is representing Jewish Voices for Peace, and he's going to talk a little bit about that organization. But I really want to start off by asking you all about just a snippet about how we came to October 2nd and what has happened since then. A bit of a brief background, because this is a long historic struggle for Palestinians. And their allies, and they have many in the world, and that seems to be increasing. So let me just say it, when Netanyahu talked before the UN, I think 3/4 of the world leaders walked out, which, you know, was unprecedented, really. You've seen protests all around the world, but I took particularly note of Italy, which 80 cities like went up and said, and they are calling for a national strike. So people are getting more and more serious about putting the kind of pressure on the Zionists to stop the genocide. And that's what it is at this point. It's, you can't define it any other way. So what do we want our listeners to know about what's happening now? I'll start with you, Alam, and then Michael.
I don't, that's such a big question. I mean, I think that, like you said, you know, there's a lot of support for Palestine, more so than I think has ever been before. And that's simultaneously like really moving and wonderful and beautiful. And also, I don't know, maybe I've become a little bit more cynical, I think, because with all the support and all of these like performative, you know, actions like the UN, like you mentioned, the walkout during the UN speech, excuse me, but like nothing's really changing, you know? And I think that's been like that for me. It's like, I don't really know what can be done at this point. if starving children and blockades of good, you know, food and supplies and UN walkouts and boycotts and, you know, massive strikes across the United, you know, across the world. And none of this has changed anything. Netanyahu is still getting on that stage and saying, this is, you know, this is all crazy and this is within our right. And this is, you know, think about the hostages. And it's the same thing I've been listening to for 2 years. And for 2 years, it's just become worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. So I don't really know. You know, I think I can feel you.
And I guess I was feeling the same way when every time I look at the images and I'm like, okay, yeah, what's changing? This is happening. But then because I don't know the inside, I don't know if something is about to break. And I look at it as one of the laws of physics is that you can, at a certain point, there's got to be a breaking point with all the things that are happening. We just don't know what that breaking point is or when it's going to be, but we got to, you know, escalate the pressure. What's your take on that, Michael?
Well, yeah, of course, keep escalating the pressure. The most important international tool being boycotts, divestment, sanctions of Israel and those who are facilitating its apartheid state and genocide. And just to make, because it's a very complicated the question you asked originally, but it's important to understand this is much bigger than Netanyahu. Netanyahu could go tomorrow and the basic situation would be the same. There is, Israel was founded, Zionism is a racist philosophy. It's to create a ethno-nationalist Jewish supremacist state in the historic land of Palestine. It's been 77 years of oppression. You could make an argument 77 years. It was certainly 77 years of ethnic cleansing. The genocide intensified greatly 2 years and a day ago. But a date that was, you know, the press barely even noticed in December 2022, you had the most extremist leaders imaginable taking direct power in Israel. So people who are nostalgic, and you can argue whether there could have been a two-state solution in the 90s with Yitzhak Rabin as the prime minister. The people who killed Yitzhak Rabin, the right-wing people who killed Yitzhak Rabin, are directly running the government right now. So this was, you know, you had the events of October 7th sparking this horror, but it's possible it was there inevitable because you had people who were willing to just set it outright before October 7th that they saw Palestinians as basically cockroaches or fleas to get rid of, just dehumanization at the highest level, and they've enacted it. And so that's, I guess, a short answer to that.
Yeah. It is a complicated question and layers of answers to that. I'm wondering, though, with a group like yours, Michael, Jewish, you know, folks for peace.
And Jewish Voice for Peace.
Yeah, Voices for Peace.
It's CBO.
Yeah, I can't help but think of Hedy Epstein, who's a Holocaust survivor, and one of the most, I think, visible Jewish persons fighting for Palestinian liberation. And people were like, well, where are the other folks? But, you know, in any struggle, there are always the folks who are not necessarily on the front line and visible. And that's why I think it's important for those voices to come to the fore. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at what's going on in Israel, where the people themselves are organized at levels that I've not seen in modern times to get those hostages released and to call for a ceasefire. And I think, you know, many of them have said, and I've heard these interviews, that, you know, Netanyahu is actually using this in a political way, and they are seeing through this, but what's at stake is their loved ones. So I think we get more educated and more conscious about how these games are being played over the land and over these rights. So what has been the, you and I talked a little bit offline about the divisions within the Jewish community about this issue and how divisive it's been. But talk a little bit about the folks who are fighting and those folks who are fighting against the righteous struggle of the Palestinians.
Thank you. I do want to caution, there are a lot of people in Israel who want the hostages back, but the percentage of the Jewish Israeli population that is concerned about the mass slaughter and starvation of Palestinians is unfortunately pretty low. There is not a mass movement in support of Palestinian rights among Jewish Israelis. There are brave people, but it's a small minority. There are people for all sorts of reasons who are discussed with Netanyahu and the way he's doing this war, which is of course the man is horrible, but there really isn't, and there isn't even the same sort of Zionist peace movement there was in 1982, invasion of Lebanon. The state of Israel, all parties have moved extremely to the right in the last 40 years. But in St. Louis area, there are many of us. You've got progressive Jews of St. Louis. You have Jewish Voice for Peace. But the organizations that claim to represent us, the people are actually interviewed representing Jews on the news, and such as the Jewish Federation, the Jewish Community Relations Council, the Anti-Defamation League, the Holocaust Museum, American Jewish Committee. These groups are all firmly allied with Zionism and with this genocide. There's not been any of these groups say a single word in opposition to any of this. You had the Jewish Federation host a soldier, Miles Rosenblum, in May, who... They praised him for being part of the genocide in Gaza and for being part of the invasion of Lebanon. It is so these organizations are firmly linked to the genocide, and they intentionally push away voices such as my own, and make claim to the Jewish community, which is very dangerous. I mean, it's just so wrong at a basic level, and very dangerous to continue to associate with such evil. It's dangerous to the future of everybody. I want to point out that, you know, all these groups went all in on lying about Cori Bush and doing everything possible to push her out of office because she told the truth from the beginning. I want to sort of go through some of the details of what happened after October 7th. Cori Bush, like many people, were horrified at how many Israelis were killed and the death and destruction. And she sponsored resolutions, co-sponsored resolutions, spoke out in empathy to Israelis, condemned the acts of Hamas and these other organizations on the day. But if you know, Israel immediately started the genocidal campaign began immediately. And within a week, you'd had hundreds of statements by Israeli officials that were outright genocidal. Outright, we are going to kill them all, doing biblical allusions. And they sort of mapped out exactly what they're going to do, and they started doing it. And immediately people said this is a genocidal campaign because it was a genocidal campaign immediately. So Cori Bush said this is ethnic cleansing. Babies are being mass murdered. And, it, you know, within a week, by October 15th, you had more people killed by Israel than all the people who had been killed by Hamas in its entire history of existence. So Cori Bush was telling the truth from the beginning. And in response, you had every one of these groups that I mentioned, these Jewish establishment groups, falsely labeling her as an anti-Semite without any evidence, without any, because there is no evidence, because she's not prejudiced against Jews, as many of us with Jews or Cori can attest, and demanding more and more meetings. And they, all, pretty much almost every rabbi in the area signed a letter to that effect, including supposed progressive rabbis at the Central Reform Congregation. They all signed on to a letter. You had an infamous op-ed by Rabbi Daniel Bogard where he compared Cori Bush to Donald Trump, saying they're both anti-Semites, which is just absurd and defamatory to Cori Bush. And they all the most of the same rabbis signed and were involved even, you know, almost a year later as you got up to the election when it was so clear what was going on. Rafah was already invaded, destroyed. Just the horrors in Gaza were so clear. They kept to the story. And I do hope there's a shift. But I urge people who were part of this to reflect and to change their ways and what they're looking at. But you have to acknowledge what you've done to change your ways. Mm-hmm. And I think Cori Bush and Palestinian people in general are owed an apology. And, you know, you still have these organizations like the Federation who are all in on what Israel is doing. You had the Jewish Federation, St. Louis Jewish Federation leader Danny Cohn released a statement praising Donald Trump for bombing Iran. What kind of, how does that represent Judaism? You're supposed to be the head of the Jewish Federation. You have this leader who was chosen with AIPAC money, Wesley Bell, who refused to impeach the president because the impeachment that Al Green put forward was over the illegal bombing of Iran. You know, so this guy says that we're fighting fascists, we're fighting this fascist president, and he won't actually try to get rid of the fascist president. So this is a result of this. But, you know, this is some of the background going on. I think it's important to name the names and point out that, like, these Jewish establishment organizations need to be, it needs to be said what they've done, and they should be shunned until they change their outlet to no longer supporting this just out of control rogue genocidal state of Israel.
Right, right. I want to stay a little bit with AIPAC because I think we know that the money just gushed in here to oppose Cori Bush since you mentioned her. She has in the last couple of weeks thrown her hat back in the ring to get her seat back. And so we'll see what happens. Will that Jewish money come gushing in again? But, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, and there's been many elections that have affirmed this, that, you know, you can out-organize even the big pocket, deep pocket people. And it's been done. You got to be highly organized because they have deep pockets.
A slight correction, because you talk about this Jewish money. A lot of the donors are Jewish, but a lot of the donors are actually Christian Zionists, which is a big issue, too. A lot of people support Israel because they have strange theological ideas that Jews need to repopulate the historic land of Palestine.
And they're destined to take that land,
The thing that is more actually in line with, it is a lot of Jewish donors, a lot of non-Jewish donors, but the vast majority are Republican donors. And this is the thing, majority Republican donors are what put money into a Democratic primary. It propelled Wesley Bell.
So I think, you know, when we saw that happen, and some people were not familiar with AIPAC, but for you, Alam, the kind of money that they have at their disposal, almost every person up there in Congress, Democrat or Republican, is getting AIPAC money, which is why they have to keep their damn mouths shut when it comes to really condemning what's going on in Israel. How do we reverse that? I know just recently there was, and it has been, a lot of pressure on Hakeem Jeffries, since he's now one of the top Democratic leaders, and he recently announced that he was going to stop taking AIPAC money. So obviously he felt the pressure, and you can't be out there talking when you are a walking contradiction. But given how much money is out there and who's getting it, and I do want to alert my listeners and viewers to the fact that there is a website called AIPAC Tracker. And if you want to know if your congressperson is getting money and how much, they'll tell you. And so we see all these people's name on here, and then you start to think, no wonder they haven't said anything about balance stack, because they paid to keep their mouth shut. So for you, you don't have a total answer, I know, Alon, but how do we individually, because it really is going to have to almost be congressperson by congressperson, your congressman, the people that you vote for, how do you get them to stop taking money from this Zionist PAC when they have an unfair advantage? Once people get that money, they're going to vote a certain way, and it's no ins and outs and buts about it. But what can be done? Let's just say
on an individual level, just, you know, continuing to put pressure on your congresspeople. You know, there's this site called notmytaxdollars.org. You can, you know, write letters to your Congress, call, you know, continue to like blast them, you know, on social media and other spaces, go to town hall meetings, you know, those types of like local actions, I think are helpful. And again, like, you know, I mean, outside of that, you know, like putting pressure for some sort of like legal system putting in place, you know, to stop AIPAC, I just don't think that happening anytime soon. So I think it's really just about, you know, like I said, like just continuing to like reach out, call, talk, post, you know, go to meetings and put yourself out there and organize, you know. I think, I think organizing, needs to look a little different. This might be controversial to say, but I find a lot of like protests and things like that just like really performative and like super not productive. Like, I don't really care about walking around downtown St. Louis on a Saturday or Sunday when everything is closed. Like, I don't find that useful. I don't think it does anything. You know what I mean? I'm like, that kind of stuff, I've kind of just checked out of that. I appreciate like there's a space for like solidarity and camaraderie in those spaces, and I think that's really important to have, and especially with something like this, you know, community, you know, that's really important. And like, we can't continue to do the same things and expect for like results to change. You know, even Mamdani is like putting out statements about like, you know, what Hamas did, this terrorist organization, you know, la, 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 la. It's like, yeah, all right, you know, how many democratic socialists are we going to have that say the same shit over and over and over again? You know, like, I just, it feels kind of helpless and hopeless. But I think, again, like, just on an individual level, you know, going to these sites, writing letters, calling, just being as annoying as possible to your Congress people, you know, just being incessant, you know, I think that that's kind of seemingly all we can do, besides for what like Michael had mentioned, which is like boycotting, you know, the BDS movement, which I find to be really useful. You know, I think that's one of the, I think a capitalist society allows for things like AIPAC and Zionism and genocide and, you know, the war machine to continue and flourish. And so like, how do you affect those spaces is by withholding your money, you know, or withholding your time, withholding your work, you know, like global strikes, go to work, or those have to think that they are really useful, you know, because it hurts financially. And that's kind of the one thing I think anyone really cares about, you know? So I don't know if that's very helpful. I think my
No, it is, because, you know, I'm feeling the same way, and I know I'm much older than you, but you know, protests, they allow you to do that all day long, and if nothing really happens differently. And so the question for me is, how do we intensify our tactics in very strategic ways that, first of all, not just gets their attention, but also impacts the kind of support that Israel keeps getting? And I think we know that the United States is the biggest ally in terms of money. And so, one of the things I keep saying is on us in this country to put the pressure as needed on Congress to stop the flow of those dollars that are helping 100%. Genocide. Because if it wasn't for the U.S., they couldn't do all the stuff that they're doing.
No, the United States right now is like, they're the puppet masters of Lebanon. They completely, and like, God rest his soul, annihilated, the leader of the Lebanese militia that I shall keep nameless. And, the United States has just destroyed and demolished that region, honestly. Their effect on Syria, their placement of this, former ISIS like leader as the president of Syria right now, their place in Lebanese government right now, what they've done, trying to like disarm Hezbollah, which is like the only way Israel hasn't occupied Lebanon is because of Hezbollah. And and on top of that, and all this with your tax dollars, all of this, it's financed through you. You know what I mean? That's what kills me. And I think people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and these other Republicans that are out here, like, they don't really care about Palestinian children. Let's be honest, they don't really care.
Yes, there's only two of them in Congress: Tom Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene, who
didn't
say it.
Yes. Right, but again, they're not here supporting or anti-Israel because. They care about Palestinian children, but they do care about the interests of American people, seemingly. Okay, and they're opposing these like hardcore Republicans are opposing the use of AIPAC and the influence that Israel has in the United States, and that's something that I think people need to really focus on more and more and more. Like me personally, of course, like I'm, yeah, mom, yeah, directly. How do I say, what's happening in Palestine, what's happening in Sudan, what's happening in Congo, what's happening all across the world, because of Israel, Zionism, capitalism, corruption, the United States, whatever, it impacts all of us. And I think that people who still have ideologies like, white supremacy are still trying to see, are still looking past or opening up their eyes to the effects that Israel has on the world, that Zionism has like on the world. And they themselves, like someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene being in opposition to Israel and to AIPAC, that says something. Why she is one thing, but I don't really care, I mean, in the long run, sure. In the long run, ideally everyone should care about genocide. But if what gets you to, oppose what's happening in Israel is the fact that it's being paid by your tax dollars, that's fine, we'll take it, the movement will take it,
but if you look at it, there really is a growing movement of people who, it's cold comfort to people who are still being starved and murdered in Gaza, but yeah, in the United States, who do care. The Democratic base is forever gone from Zionism. You have this party leadership,
what do you mean,
the people, actual Democratic voters, do not support what the United States is doing to Palestinians. The polls have come out that if you say, do you approve of what the United States policy towards Israel and what Israel's doing in Gaza? It's, I think, over 90% of Democrats, registered Democrats, oppose it. The Democratic base has shifted in the last 2 years tremendously. This is why Mom Dani is, whatever critiques you have of him, he goes further than anybody else who's ever run for mayor of New York, and will, sure. And it doesn't matter. You had Cuomo putting that as the central campaign. Oh, he doesn't support Israel, and voters were like, either good or we don't care. The Democratic base has shifted. The voters have shifted. The people have shifted. On the right, it is more about national sovereignty, but there's shift is going on in both parties. Maybe for somewhat different reasons, but I think there are actually Republicans, maybe not these legislators, who truly care about the horrors that are going. I mean,
I'm sure. I'm not, it's not, and I'm sure there are, and again, like, it's just not my major concern, like, just because it's like, just looking at like the bigger picture here, I think for me, but yeah, I'm sure there are.
But I think you're right, like, the public opinion doesn't change, but actual boycotts, I mean, there is a strategy to deny Israel access to isolate it diplomatically, which is happening, although not nearly quickly enough, and to deny the materials it needs to maintain its genocide and its apartheid structure. This is an international movement. I think the flotillas have been very, very helpful in that regard in exposing and forcing them to use resources.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because I've you know, Jamal had mentioned talking about the flotilla, and again, you know, I've been having this like feeling about just like things just feeling so like performative. I'm like, what even is the point? We know they're not going to get there. We know that Israel's not going to allow aid to enter Gaza. Like, they're not going to. They're going to completely destroy everything and everyone there. That's what I believe, and that's what we're seeing every single day. And like, I think you're right. Like, I don't have any words. Postpartum brain. I'm like, it is insane. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. Having something like that going on so publicly is important. You know, like you said, like Mom Donnie, like speaking about it, even if it's not as radical as I would hope, you know, just the fact that he's out there being as progressive or more progressive than anyone before, or like the flotilla is bringing a lot of like, you know, attention, and that's important, you know. And it's like, how do we take things further? You know, I don't know. What else can people do? They're getting on ships trying to send, you know, aid to people. That's not doing anything. People are protesting. That's not doing anything. What even is, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know.
So yeah, I think for me, and Michael, I'm going to get to you in a minute, the fact that, for example, the flotilla, which I think was probably one of the largest that I've seen in recent times, try to get through there, the fact that they couldn't and were stopped, amplified the fact that it's about genocide.
Yeah.
And so people seeing that, like, wait a minute, they claim they couldn't get supplies and food and that kind of thing, but here's some folks trying to do that and they're stopping them. So for me, I think that's directly related to the shift that Michael spoke of about, you know, people looking at this on a daily basis almost, because we're seeing the images and saying, well, how is this going to stop? Well, here's some people that are trying to get some simple food and supplies in, and they're not. So that to me is adding to the pressure that I'm saying in a physics term is got to break at some point. When that is, I don't know. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the complicated situation in Palestine with Michael Berg and Alam Jaber, and we're trying to figure it out. And, you know, part of it is educating people about what's happening, but also giving them some tools to respond, because otherwise you get totally demoralized just looking at the rubble day after day and the fact that it doesn't seem like they're going to stop until they level the whole damn Gaza Strip. And so Michael, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, so I'm looking at, you know, even a year ago, the Democratic opinions have been changing. I was one of the uncommitted delegates to the Democratic National Convention. We're, you know, one of the 30, and, you know, the leadership marginalized us, wouldn't even let a Palestinian speak in an extraordinarily racist way. You have, the convention was in Chicago, which has the largest Palestinian American population in the country, and we asked for a Palestinian legislator to speak for 2 minutes to praise Kamala Harris, to support Kamala Harris, Kamala Harris, and then say a few words about the horrors that are going on in Palestine, but they literally just said no Palestinian allowed on stage. This might have cost them the election. Looking at how opinion had changed last year, if you look at all that AIPAC money, over $12 million, almost none of the money was focusing on the issue of Palestine and Israel. It was misrepresenting why she took vote on the infrastructure bill, almost all of it. And when I go to doors, knocking on people's doors, they would see the things on YouTube. They could see the mailers and they'd say, oh, she's not with Biden. She's not supporting the Democrats, which was incorrect. She was far left. They misrepresented her record. But the money was going to that because they knew the issue, the reason they entered and put the money in, their position was not popular among Democratic voters. I think we have to just continue to push back about what's going on in our city. Supporting Cori Bush is very important. Holding people accountable for not telling the truth about things. I wanted to talk about, we have this, there's a rabbi, Jeffrey Abraham, who's the chief rabbi at B'nai Amona congregation, who was quoted between October 2023 and January 2025, at least 20 times, quoted in the press, giving a very pro-Israel position, bad-mouthing Jewish Voice for Peace and other anti-Zionist Jewish groups, never exhibiting an ounce of empathy for Palestinians who were murdered, and demanding that people support Israeli position, falsely calling protesters at WashU and SLU violent. This, he was quoted many, many times. He had a post on Facebook in late January where he said, "There are no innocent civilians in Gaza. Everybody in Gaza is Hamas. All Palestinians everywhere need to be re-educated." And that liked someone who said, "Animals, full stop," in response to Palestinians. Now, this is outright genocidal language. And important, this kind of way of thinking is the dominant way of thinking among Israeli Jews, this dehumanization of Palestinians. But this is genocidal racist views. And I look at, if an imam had said something similar about Jews, there would be an uproar. They would demand that other imams, rightly, I think these Jewish organizations rightly should demand to distance themselves, because it is wrong. To say those things about Jews is wrong. It's wrong to say them about Palestinians too. But so Jewish Voice for Peace, Progressive Jews of St. Louis, we publicized this as much as we could. We wrote to all these television stations and the Post-Dispatch and said, you have to write a story, you have to have a story on it. The Post-Dispatch, to its credit, did. None of the other media outlets did. And then we went to, ask any rabbi in town to condemn their colleague for a genocidal statement. Any of these establishment Jewish organizations. We showed up at the Jewish Federation with letters for every member of the board and every staff. We showed up at the St. Louis Holocaust Museum, which still has not recognized this genocide. There has been total silence among, except for the Post-Dispatch, among the media organizations. And there's been silence among every rabbi in town. None of them specifically criticized Abraham's words, and none of these organizations have. So this is now recently in talking about a property crime, a burning of a car in Clayton. They interviewed Rabbi Abraham again, KSDK, knowing all this, knowing what he said without any context, filmed for several seconds. We stand with Israel at his congregation. And so I would, if there's something you can do tangibly, call KSDK and say they shouldn't be platforming genocidal voices. I think that's important.
And, Mike, to that point, I think one of the things that makes it difficult for people to act around this issue is because both sides may appear to have compelling arguments, and people don't know which one, but what they see is the destruction of whole sections of a town, of an area where Palestinians live. They see children being pulled out of the rubble. They see the convoys being stopped with food. That part of it touches the human heart if you have one. So then people say, well, what can we do about that part of it? If we don't understand all the politics involved and who's supposed to have what, because then we start talking about the two-state solution, people, okay, well, what is that? And there's real strong views of even about that. So how, I think one of the things that we could do is zero in on the humanitarian piece of it that's indisputable. That folks need to survive so they can even have a conversation about that.
I want to respond, and I'll let Alam give her chance to speak.
Yeah.
Speaking a lot, but I do wonder. I think that part of it is, sure, people might think the situation is complicated. I think that's less so now because it's so it's been uncomplicated for the last 100 years, but it's so uncomplicated now. Like, if you can't decide whether or not it is right or wrong to just completely destroy an entire population and level cities, of civilians, then there's something in your head that's wrong. The fear is to be called anti-Semitic, and these organizations have weaponized the accusation of anti-Semitic to scare people and cow people. They did that against Cori Bush. It has to be emphasized how insanely unfair and unjust it was to Cori Bush because of her compassion for humanity to smear her in this way. But I tell people that, like, you know, try not to be anti-Semitic. Don't say the Jews or the, because Jews are very complicated and diverse, but, like, also respond to what you see. And it is more important that you stand up against the genocide or for human rights than that you avoid accidentally saying something that could be misconstrued or seen the wrong way. Like, do not be scared. This is life and death. And it's not just life and death for people, Palestinians. It's this, whatever can be done to Palestinians can be done to any of us here, as we see, as the fascist blowback comes back here. So do not be cowed. Do not be afraid. If you know what you're doing is right, don't try to be anti-Semitic. But if you know what you're saying is right and you're standing up against genocide, just let people call you a smear. If you know they're wrong, don't be afraid to be smeared, because it's a small price to pay for opposing the worst crime imaginable.
Right. Alam, you want to jump in?
I mean, everything Michael said, for sure. I think that, you know, there are tactics that, you know, Zionists use to make sure people are afraid to, like, say what is, you know? You know, we have things like the Canary Mission. We have things like, you know, people getting fired from jobs, anti-Semitic, this and that. It's like, you need to be fearless, I think, in certain ways. You know, you do, because this is life and death, like Michael said. You know, and it's not anti-Semitic to say I don't believe the state of Israel has a right to exist, or I don't believe that Zionism is, you know, righteous, or, you know, that you have every right to have those stances and still be in full support of the Jewish people, love the Jewish people. So, you know, they're not one thing. It's not one thing. You know, to be Zionist, that means to be Jewish. To be Jewish, that means to be Zionist. And to conflate that is such an insult, actually. So many of my Jewish friends are like, it's such, you know, this idea that, like, yeah, I know, Mom, it's infuriating. My daughter, she's very upset, you know. I think that the left, because oftentimes left comes at things from this place of, like, you know, more love for humanity, more support for each other, more that they're not as, like, cutthroat. But I'm of the mindset that, like, you know, the tactics that the right uses, the tactics that the Zionist Nazi movement uses, the left needs to challenge that in every single possible way, fearlessly. Otherwise, things are not going to change. Like, I'm not scared I'm going to lose my job. I don't care. Like, I'll say what I have to say. I don't care. You know, well, and if everyone does that, then there's not going to be those kinds of repercussions. You know what I mean? Who gives a shit, excuse my language, about the Canary mission? Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? What are you scared about? What are you scared about? Some Zionists put you on some website? Who cares? Make your own website. Put Zionists on there. Zionists should be in fear. Like, Nazis were in fear. Like, Nazis fled to the United States, and they fled to Argentina, and they fled because they were scared, right? They should be scared here. Zionists should be scared here. Proud Boys should be scared here. You know, these people should be scared. So if that puts me in a situation where I'm, you know, a little less, you know, a little more vulnerable in finding a university position later on, I don't want to work there. I don't want to be in those spaces. You know what I mean? If you don't fully, 100%, do not support the Zionist Nazi movement, then I don't want to work for you. Not you don't want to hire me. I don't care. You know what I mean? And that's how I think that's how it has to happen. You have to be extreme in the sense of, you know, extreme with your love, extreme with your support, extreme with your advocacy and for justice. You know what I mean? No one's going to, you got to, I mean, I'm not sitting here saying we all have to die for justice, but in a way you got to be willing to, otherwise things are not going to change. you know? Yeah. It's hard for me to say this as a new mom. You know, I love my daughter to, I can't even, the word love doesn't even encapsulate how I feel about my daughter. And still, there are things greater than that. There are things greater, you know? And especially as being, as a new mom, as an Arab mom, as a Lebanese mother, you know, and seeing what's happening in Gaza and seeing what's happening in Lebanon, like seeing what's happening, oh, it just, it hits on a whole nother level. When a mom can't feed her baby, you know, she can't breastfeed them because she's not, she doesn't have any food in her stomach and there's no formula and there's nothing. These children are just dying. They're just dying from starvation. If they're not dying from starvation, they're dying from being bombed. If they're not dying from being bombed, they're dying from the wounds. There's nothing to heal them with. There's just nothing. It's honest to God. It's beyond devastating. There's no words anymore. So I don't give a shit if I get fired from a job. You know, I don't care. If you call me anti-Semite. I don't care. I know I'm not. I know. Right. Like I said, I know I'm not. And I don't care. What are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do? That's the mentality that I think people have to walk around with. I don't give a shit and I don't care. And what are you going to do about it? You know?
Well, I think the three of us, that is our position. And, you know, I'm emboldened. I write about it. I really don't care what kind of blowback I get, what kind of anti-Jewish, anti-Semite kind of thing that I'm going to get, because you got to speak truth to power. What I want to say is that there is a folks who, and this is particularly to what you said, Michael, who believe it is complicated. And it's complicated, particularly if you use a religious lens. And I'm saying, for example, if Jewish people said the Bible, God told them that they had a land, and this is the land that God told them they had, that complicates it for people who believe in the Bible and who believe in God's word. Because then you say, like, who am I as a mortal to resist what God has told the Jewish people? So I want us to be mindful that the way that we think is not necessarily the norm. And there's not too many jobs that I would take, to your point, Lambert, that if they're supporting something unjust, you know, it's not that I have the privilege. I have the principle, not so much the privilege, the principle that I'm not going to get a paycheck from somebody that I don't agree with in principle. And so I think we have a hell of a public opinion battle to fight, that there is enough of that anti-Semite thing that happens when you say something and then people see the retribution of those folks who even have some credibility, some visibility, some stature, what happens to them, like a Cori Bush. So there is that fear. I get that, yeah.
There's the attempts to try to codify and over codify into law our inability, like making it illegal to say accurate things about Israel. I was involved fighting back against they tried to pass a bill. It passed the Missouri House and then died in the Senate, which is good. To a bill to codify the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism into law when applied to public schools, both K-12 and colleges and universities. And this has what they call contemporary examples. So by this definition, if you said Israel is intrinsically a racist state, you could be called anti-Semitic. That's a factual statement. Israel is intrinsically a racist state. If you compared the contemporary actions of Israel right now to that of Nazis, you could be called anti-Semitic. As I testified, when I testified about that, I saw quotes from IDF soldiers who came back and said, "I felt like a Nazi." Well, can I quote the soldier? It's also, even if you think that's not an apt parallel now, how can you codify into law that one governmental regime can never be compared to another governmental regime? I mean, it's fundamentally against First Amendment rights, but the way they get around is it just be for, you wouldn't go to jail, but like, you could lose your tenure if you're a professor. Right. You'd be suspended if you're a student. You can have to like do community service. You can be kicked out of school. So this is very, very, very dangerous. And not applied to any other country. Just this so fundamental. And want to point out, like, all the organizations that I mentioned testified in support of this fundamental attack on free speech. the St. Louis Jewish Federation, the St. Louis Jewish Community Relations Council, the National Council of Jewish Women, the Anti-Defamation League, the St. Louis Kaplan Feldman Holocaust Museum, the American Jewish Committee, they all testified to take away free speech rights on campus in order to defend the state of Israel. So this is happening, and I think we have to fight back. And even if they pass something like that, say it anyways. Like,
yeah.
What is the point of going on? What is the point of even calling this the best parts of what America is our First Amendment? If that's gone, what are we?
So Michael, in the few minutes that we have left, there, you know, folks are doing resolutions and laws favoring Palestinian liberation. And in St. Louis, there is going to be at least a resolution introduced. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Google Not Another Nickel St. Louis, and you'll find our petition. As a project of the St. Louis Palestine Solidarity Committee, there's a campaign to have the committee divest from any investments on the prescribed list for the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement worldwide, which is Palestinian-led nonviolent movement to oppose the apartheid, now genocidal state. And you should sign that and get involved. And the resolution should be finished completion in the next couple weeks and then supported at the Board of Aldermen. There's also a campaign. Israel Chemical Limited has a very large plant in South St. Louis and is looking to build another plant to build lithium batteries in North St. Louis, right near the zone of the tornado. You could see if a tornado ever hit, it would be a disaster. It's an environmental problem. This is a company, Israel Chemical Limited, that has been involved in massive pollution in historic Palestine, in the Negev Desert, what area controlled right now by the State of Israel. It also creates white phosphorus, which is used to burn off the skin of human beings, Lebanese human beings, Palestinian human beings. And they don't build it, as far as we can tell, in the St. Louis plants, but the company creates this horrible weapon. The company is involved, is a partnership with the government of Israel, Israel Chemical Limited. It's a private company, but it began in partnership. And it's been involved in just really bad problems with the Jordan River, which probably a lot of people sing about and are important. Hmm. Well, this company has damaged the Jordan River, which is an international problem too, because half the Jordan River should be controlled by the country of Jordan. But so the city of the SLDC has granted massive tax subsidies for this company to build this plant in North St. Louis. They shouldn't get tax subsidies. They shouldn't be in our city. This company should not be in our city. They certainly should not get subsidies. So if you live in the city of St. Louis, let your alderman or your alderwoman know that you don't want any money going to ICL, and you'd like ICL to no longer be in the city.
So, Michael, is there a place where is that on the Not Another Nickel site where
it is not?
Okay, because go to the website. Folks need to get a little bit of context and background for that company, because I agree, it has no business being here.
Consult this website, icloutofstl.com. That's iclouTofstl.com, icloutofstl.com. You can get all the background about the history of ICL and why it has no business being here, but it is here.
Okay.
And so, the subsidies that are taken away.
And that's an easy one for us to organize around. We could just tell people, here's a petition, sign it. But I do think we should mobilize people to be at that board of alderperson when it's introduced and hopefully passed, so that people could see the support for the resolution.
I believe it's in Alderwoman Tyus's district. It's right on the board with Alderwoman Boyd's district, so it's worth contacting both of them, but the whole board also.
Okay. Alam, any last words for us from somebody who still has family in that region, who has a historical and really ancient history to the region that has totally been, and I can't think of a, been colonized And for people who understand, in more local terms, gentrified with Jewishness and whiteness, what that looks like and what it means for people to have to view the prospects of what is going on in Gaza and feeling helpless and powerless, what words of inspiration can you leave us with?
I think I'll agree with what you said in the beginning of this podcast, which is that things are moving and changing, and the world is waking up, and it feels slow and it feels miserable, and it is miserable. And at the same time, you know, just try to remember that, like you said, you know, physics, like there will be an end to this, and hopefully something that ends such mass injustice across the entire region. You know, keep your eyes open, your heart open, your ears open, and, you know, find your people and be connected with yourself, with the earth, and with each other, you know. As we try to navigate through this, this is unprecedented times, I really believe. And there is a giant shift. So just lean into that knowledge and you know, you're not alone. That's the thing. We're not alone, you know?
Yeah. And to that point, I think that when people fight locally and nationally here, they're helping the international fight, because it is here in this country that kind of racist attitude is projected all across the globe.
Oh, it's all connected.
If we can contain it in here, then it helps our people elsewhere in this country, because this is where the monster lives. And if we can start cutting out the tentacles, then it helps other people be able to breathe and survive and thrive.
100%.
So our responsibility here, while we still have rights to assembly, right to freedom of speech,
right to boycott, right to buy refurbished phones, please be conscientious of where you spend your money, how you spend your money. Be conscientious of what's happening in Palestine. Be conscientious of what's happening in Congo and Sudan and Hawaii and Puerto Rico and all over Turtle Island. Just be conscientious. Like, just that we have the right to do that still.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the biggest hit to people. So just be conscientious. Yeah. Do not buy Starbucks. Do not buy Lay's. Do not buy McDonald's. Do not watch, you know, Disney Plus. Yeah. Like, boycott and connect. That's all I can say about it.
And Alam, I've been saying that for the last year, you know, don't let them take your voice, your vote, or your ability to spend money or not spend money, because that's where our power is. It really is. And if you don't vote, or if you don't like raise your voice, if you don't stop buying or buying products that are really undergirding this whole capitalist system, then you're giving up your power, and we only got a little bit left of that to do. I want to thank my guests today, Michael Berg and Alam Jaber, for being here, helping us understand what's going on in that Mideast part of the world. Gaza is genocide. What is happening is genocide, and we have the power to stop it here in the United States. Coming up next week, with all the conflict in the world, the violence, interpersonal violence, as well as state violence, we want to bring some folks from the Conflict Resolution Center right here in St. Louis to help us understand some of the programs and that they have available to us. And if you want to get past shows, particularly now that we're doing a live stream on Facebook, those videos are up on YouTube, but you can always get the audio links at JamalaRogers.com if you missed anything or you want to hear them again. But yeah, this is some perilous times that we're living in, no matter where you are in the world. I can't think of a place that's got peace, you know, that something is happening that's really affirming life. You know, it's really a sad time that we're in. But I also believe that we are the majority. We just have to find our voice and our power to turn these things around. So, yes, this is Jamala Rogers. Yeah, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And I really do hope to see you on the battlefield. So be safe out there. Thank you for listening.
Right now, we've got to do the right thing.